And my friend will come for us all.
Hey, Samantha, where can they find us on the social medias?
I am so glad you asked. They can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Reaper Tales Podcast and on TikTok at reaper.tales.podc. Just podc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can email us at reapergals@reapertales.com. I'm always looking at it. So if you're one of the ones that emails me on a regular basis, you know that. I do respond almost in real time, unless like
almost.
I'm on vacation or like I'm bed rotting, but that's a different thing. So email us at reapergals, G-A-L-S, at reapertales.com. Email me to tell me that I look pretty. Email me to tell me I'm doing a good job and to send us your show suggestions and anything else that you want us to cover or anything like that. So, yeah.
And please remember to like, rate, review, subscribe, all the things you lovely listeners know what to do anyway on any of the listening platforms that you use. As per usual, you get bonus points if you do it on platforms you don't listen to us on, but you give us a nice little review. And worded reviews will get special shout outs. So if you are so inclined to do so, please do us a favor. Makes it a little easier for people to find us. And if you don't want to be listed out, by the way, on the worded reviews, it's too bad. We're still going to give you a shout out.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if you say we smell like boogers or something like that. Okay, thanks.
Rude.
Hello, I'm Montana.
And I'm Samantha.
And I'm Kelsey. And you're listening to
Reaper Tales.
We suck. I don't know.
It's good enough.
That'll work. I mean, heck, half the time we don't do it right, so it's fine.
I know.
That's true.
Okay, and today I am going to tell you guys about my postpartum story, and it's a crazy one. But before we get started, Samantha, what are we drinking?
Apparently, it's not the worst drink that we could come up with, but it's pretty bad.
It's close.
On the bright side, you can edit as needed because every single one of us did. But it is called The Mother. And basically, I'm going to give you ingredients and expect you to measure with your heart and probably your taste buds after you mix it, because you're probably going to have to add a little bit here and there. But general rule of thumb, because they're kind of more like guidelines than actual rules, vodka, gin, grenadine, sweet and sour mix, and then you're going to top it with beer. And if you have any idea how drinks are made, you know that that's already pretty gross. So edit as needed. Not a single one of us completely followed the ingredients. So
no.
Cheers.
I use a Truly instead of a beer. Cheers.
Cheers. Here we go. Cheers. And we also have a special guest with us today. Her name is Connie Mann, and she is my psychiatrist. I guess she's a nurse practitioner. Do you want to say a couple things, Connie, before we get started? Just introduce yourself, I guess.
Yeah, sure. So I am not a psychiatrist. That's super sweet of you, but I'm a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner. So
oops.
It's okay. I still prescribe and manage medications, and that's what I did for you through your whole journey. But the difference is I have an overseeing prescriber who signs off on those medications that have to be supervised through the DEA. Good stuff.
Okay. That makes sense. Awesome.
That's what mine is. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what mine was too.
A nurse practitioner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gotta love your nurse practitioners. You know, the thing is they're nurses and they've been through it all. So we care. We have big hearts.
I feel like I've had better experiences with nurse practitioners than I have the actual doctors, to be perfectly honest. So if I have an option, I typically go for the nurse practitioner.
Yeah. A lot of people say that. But yeah, doctors are awesome too.
Well, and I did also want to make a point. One of the reasons why we felt the need to do this episode, not just because it's important to talk about and not just because it was Kelsey's story and she wanted to share and we think it's important to talk about it. This initially was going to kick off Mental Health Month, but we ended up kind of going out of order. So technically we had another episode before this, but this is to honor Mental Health Month. So
which is May.
We're coming into May. An important topic.
Mm-hmm. Mental Health Awareness Month. So here we are doing it. It's so exciting. And yeah, I guess I'll just get into it here. So
hey, take the reins. I'm happy I don't have to talk a whole bunch and lose my voice. Gosh.
Are you?
And yet you're still going to. We all know.
You're a Leo. You're still going to. I think you might just talk.
I do. I know. I'm just going to interrupt a whole bunch. But I was there for this. So
yeah.
Oh, hey, somebody else gets to experience the interruptions outside of just me.
Okay, cool. You're welcome.
It's fine. But yeah, if you want to jump in and say something, because yeah, Montana, you were there. You didn't have to see me firsthand, but you definitely knew the experience. And I would love for you to share the little part that you share about thinking that you needed to break me out, but we'll get there.
Yeah. Okay.
So today, like I said, I'm going to tell you about my postpartum story. These are things that happened to me that I have remembered over time, as well as details that had been told to me after the fact, because there's quite a few things that I don't remember about the experience. And this experience was anything but typical. I'm deciding to share today because mental health is so important, no matter what stage of life you're in. And I also wanted to like raise awareness about postpartum issues in general, because they cannot be ruled out, and women must be aware, and their partners must be aware of what can happen, because personally, I had no idea that any of this was possible before it happened to me. I also want to share because I want to make it easier for others to talk to their doctors about postpartum and make sure that more doctors are talking to their patients about it. So these events happened over 3 years ago. So now that I am past it, I can laugh about it. But I know sometimes that can be triggering to laugh about mental health problems. I'm not laughing at it. I'm laughing because I'm laughing at myself. So if that bothers you, listeners, you may want to skip this. It's fine. But
are you new?
Just wanted to
that would
that
be my first
there.
Question. Are you right. new to this podcast?
Because we do frequently. My mental health.
Yeah,
and my every episode. Like,
that's yeah. Sometimes the only way you can get through it or get past it is to just laugh at it.
Absolutely.
Especially in the past.
Yeah, for sure. So I do not suffer from any severe mental illnesses besides anxiety, but don't we all have that? But that does not mean that this experience is ruled out for anyone. And it is a wild ride. So let's all buckle up. I'm going to tell it in chronological order. So I'm going to start day 1 through 3-ish, my postpartum period. So for those of you who don't know, if you're a man or if you just don't know, you are in your postpartum period once you give birth to a child. That's your postpartum. You're after you give birth.
Is it like immediate?
Yeah. Well, it's like a term they use right after you give birth, and you're in your postpartum period for, I think they consider you postpartum for a whole year. Is that right, Connie? A whole year after you give birth?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's shaking her head.
Okay.
So I gave birth to Trip on December 30th, 2020. So this was like during the pandemic, just to give you an idea.
I always forget his birthday so close to mine. That's so sweet.
I know. It's right next to it. Yeah. He was due on the 31st, but I popped him out on the 30th because I was like, get out of here, dude. Mm-hmm. So again, day 1 through 3-ish, my experience leaving the hospital after giving birth to my incredible son was exciting. And I was able to get Trip to latch and feed pretty well because I was breastfeeding. And I was really looking forward to being in my own house and with my family. But before I was discharged from the hospital, a nurse came to take my vitals one more time, and she said my blood pressure was high, which is very strange for me because I've always had great blood pressure, both before I was pregnant and during my whole pregnancy. She said we had to wait a while and check it again before they would let me leave. So we hung out. A little while later, they took my blood pressure again. It had gone down slightly, but she was still kind of hesitant. She was worried about my blood pressure. But my husband, Michael, he suggested we could use a monitor. My mother-in-law is also a nurse practitioner, so she had a cuff on hand. So he told the nurse, like, we can monitor her blood pressure at home, you know. And so I ended up being discharged. Like, looking back at it now, like in hindsight, that was my anxiety causing my blood pressure to be high. It wasn't mm-hmm. anything wrong with my actual blood pressure. But at the time, we didn't really know that. So the next few days were typical of a new mom and dad taking care of a newborn, late night feeding, sleepless hours, nursing, pumping, baby crying, all that shit. Like, the only thing out of the ordinary was my blood pressure. At least that's what we thought. It was still high. I didn't have any idea why it could be high, but I decided to see my doctor.
Out of curiosity.
Sure.
Just a quick question. Mm-hmm. Was your pulse rate also high?
I don't know, because I don't think we monitored that.
Okay. Oh,
okay. That's a really good question. Because I didn't have my Apple Watch at the time, so like I didn't look at my heart rate, you know?
Well, as a person with generalized anxiety, that's usually my first indication that there's something wrong.
it was so weird because it didn't feel like normal anxiety, and I'll get to it. But okay, so this is day like 4 or 5. I decided to go to the doctor. But before leaving the house, I was very nervous to leave Trip for the first time since having him, and it had only been a few days. So I took one of his socks with me. Again, this was like a huge red flag. Why didn't I see that I was obviously anxious? Didn't see it. Took one of his socks. It was inside my mask at the doctor's office because I remember COVID. So I was wearing a mask, but I had it because I had to smell him. I was, you know, looking back, like I said, obvious red flag of anxiety, but I couldn't see it then, I guess. So it came as no surprise that I was diagnosed with postpartum anxiety, and it is not the same as postpartum depression, which is something that is very common for women to have, but because I was not sad, really. You know, I didn't have depression. I was very on edge, very jumpy, very much like, don't touch my kid. I've got him. Let me hold him. I'm going to hold him the whole time, all the time. I don't care if he's sleeping, whatever he's doing. And like I said, it was strange because I've had anxiety for years, but it felt different. It didn't feel like the anxiety that I was used to. I don't know how else to explain it. Like, it was more maybe like paranoia. It was very strange. But
was it also more focused, like in a specific way? Well,
probably.
More focused towards your child and being with your child rather than being just anxious in general or anxious in a situation.
Yes.
It's kind of focused more towards your child or your proximity to your child, maybe. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds about right, too. It was very much, I needed to be near him. I wanted to look at him. I wanted to see him, touch him, like
obsessive.
Be close to him. What'd you say, Connie?
Thank you. That was the word I was looking for. Obsessive. Yeah.
Obsessive.
Yes.
Yeah.
Obsessive.
Yes.
That's a great way to put it. That's exactly what I was.
That's exactly what it was. Yeah.
What? You're a professional and you came up with the right word.
Our professional here is professional.
It was never going to be on my shoulders because I forgot the word for grenadine earlier and I called it the red stuff.
The red stuff. My red stuff broke. So I was given some new medication for this postpartum anxiety and was set on my way. And I left that appointment thinking, okay, I've had anxiety forever. I can handle it. I know I got this. So I think I went home, you know, back to new mom life. Day 6-ish postpartum, the lack of sleep, constant feeding and pumping. Like when you breastfeed, it is no joke. Like just dairy farm status. He was on me or I was pumping. It seemed like for 24/7. So Michael and I had some heated conversations and we decided we needed to stay with the in-laws because we could not do it by ourselves. We packed our bags and we were there. So day 6 to like 10, we were at my in-laws' house. And at my in-laws, just so you know who all was there, it was a full house. So it was myself, my husband, our newborn, and then Michael's sister, her 2-month-old preemie baby, her husband, their 3-year-old, and then of course my in-law, my mother-in-law and father-in-law were there. So big, big house full of people, but we had so many people
and
to help,
so many
right?
babies. And so many
babies. Two babies and a 3-year-old. Yeah.
And it's loud. They're loud.
It was something. While at my in-laws, I was able to start my medications. It seemed like a good fit, but something still felt off. I felt on edge and I still needed some support. So Morgan, my sister-in-law, like I said, she had a 2-month-old at the time. She suggested I start journaling because just to get my thoughts on paper, to ease my mind. But this is kind of where the shit gets more crazy, because I then became obsessed with the journaling. That became something I was obsessed with. I was writing down literally everything that was happening, and I was like, I was narrating my own life and putting it under a microscope. So I was holding on to these details that were normal, but to me, in my head at the time, they seemed very abnormal. They seemed weird. And I can only describe it as like I was waiting for something to happen that it was never happening. Like when, you know, when you're at the top, on the top of the hill at the roller coaster, you know, and like that feeling of like, ooh, when is it going to drop? It was like that every day, waiting for something to.
There's the paranoia is kicking in.
Here's my crazy journal. I'm not going to read you the whole entry because it's kind of long, but like this was my journal for my, this was when I started my journal on January the 7th is when I started writing this. And I basically just go into our morning, we snuggled and we did this and that and whatever. And then towards the end, I say, let's see, Michael and I worked together to fix breakfast. We sat and ate at the table and enjoyed eating. We stared lovingly at Tripp, who was sleeping soundly in his swing. Like, I don't know. It's just, that's what I wrote. And then
I mean, I believe it.
Well, yeah. And then I say a couple things. And then it says, soon after this glorious moment, shit hit the fan. You see, I have postpartum anxiety. And it, like I'm narrating, I don't even know. And then it says, which presents with anxiety, duh, but also OCD and ADHD. I basically feel like a roller coaster I can't get off every day. I'm diagnosing myself with things that I don't have. But again, I don't even know. It's so weird, like walking through it again.
Girl, you had ADHD? What?
I mean, I guess I did. I thought I did. I felt like I did, maybe. I don't know.
God, don't say that right now, please. Because when people listen to this podcast, they're all going to... It's already a big trend on TikTok and all that. Everybody has ADHD. Everybody has ADHD.
I know. Montana really has it, but no, I don't have it.
We all know that. That's. I didn't need the diagnosis. That just confirmed what I'd suspected for the entire time I've known her.
Yeah. But you were right. You were right about one thing. You did have OCD. So if you had postpartum at that time, anxiety or depression, same, they sort of go together with OCD tendencies, same thing. Mm-hmm.
Would the her feeling like ADHD, would that be the mania, the manic part, possibly?
With ADHD?
What her feeling like she had ADHD, would that be kind of more closely aligned with like the manic aspect?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Yeah, I think because like I felt like I couldn't slow down. And that's how you feel when you're manic. So I just assume that's how you feel when you're ADHD. But I don't know because I'm not. But anyway... So, even though we had this house full of people, I was sleeping less and less. Even though we had a good schedule of feedings, we had a whole house full of people to help us, I was not able to sleep. You know, we took turns. Heather would, we would all, like, when it was my turn with the baby or whoever's turn, they took a turn with like Tripp and Aria, the other baby in the house. So we would be like in the living room area and we had like a pack and play and a swing and blankets and pillows and all these things where everyone could be comfortable, right? But I still did not sleep. I would lay down to sleep and then I would wake up like 10 or 15 minutes later and I would be like, I slept for hours. My concept of time was just gone. I literally thought I had slept. So when everyone would tell me otherwise, I would be pissed because I felt like I was being gaslit. I was like, no, I fucking slept. I did. Like, I went to bed. I closed my eyes. I did the sleep thing. I didn't. I didn't. So it was a problem. It was a huge problem because I was exhausted. And this, I guess, was sort of when I was becoming manic. So I couldn't sleep. I felt like I couldn't relax. I couldn't lay down. So again, I journaled. So like, I'm going to show you this page because it's just a mess.
I was she would have brought this into the office. I would have loved to have read that sometime.
Okay, so this one, this part is funny because literally I was in a sentence. I said, allow me to elaborate, dot, dot, dot. You have a day or two on cloud clarity. Like, there's no, I didn't finish my sentence. And then I just jumped to something different. And then.
Now that does sound like ADHD.
That's what my brain is like, by the way.
I was doing hashtags for everybody. So Montana.
Isn't a journal, Kelsey?
I know. But I was hashtagging things. Your hashtag was, oh, so I put Tana, girls night out, bestie, OMG, let's get hammered, oh shit, bad idea. Like, that's.
That's like every single time I go out with Montana. Like, I just copy and paste those hashtags every time.
Yes. It was
you just told me about that.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I hashtag everybody. I was just like, hashtag this, hashtag that. Okay. Okay. I didn't know because I didn't understand the concept of time at the moment. I didn't know how long I was doing things for. So I would journal for, I don't even know how long, hours, I guess, and just not know. So people had to remind me to feed trip. I had to be reminded to pump, be reminded. And actually, like, I started to dry up a little bit because I wasn't pumping and nursing enough. And thankfully I had pumped a lot when my milk first came in. So he had, you know, he wasn't going hungry. He was being fed. But I was writing all these crazy theories about how other children were my children, how there was some kind of surprise waiting for me. Like I said, I kept thinking that something was going to happen. I was waiting. I kept, like, I was manic, so I couldn't relax. I was just 100 miles an hour, and I was paranoid. And I basically kept asking people, what are we doing next? What's next? What's happening next? What now? Right? And it was mostly just like, it's time to go to bed. It's time to eat. Like, everything was very just, and it, yeah. So around this time, I think we had been there a few days probably, and Heather, my mother-in-law, got on my phone. She asked my permission, I guess. I don't remember, but she ended up messaging my primary care and my OBGYN team, like my doctors, and just to, like, let them know, here's what's going on, right? Like, she's on the medication. You know, we think, and she's a nurse practitioner. Like I said, she said she can't finish a task. She cannot sleep. She's refusing to sleep. She's, you know, somewhat combative at times. Like, I was very, like, mean at times. So she tried to get some help that way or whatever. So I think they ended up prescribing me other medication as well to help me sleep, but I don't remember exactly. So my sister-in-law, like I said, Morgan, had just had a baby 2 months prior to me, and I was attached at her hip. Like, she was my best friend during this time. She called me Crazy Kelsey. Like, now she calls me that. That was, she's like, I love Crazy Kelsey. She loved me. I was her best friend. Like, and so, like, when at first it was fine, we were like, it was okay. But then I was like, just not, I was hallucinating at some point. And I would, like, grab her baby and be like, come on, Trip, let's go. And she's like, no, wait, that's my baby. And I'm like, no, this one's mine too. And this one's mine. And this is my baby. These are my babies. So, like, it was, and she was, thankfully, she was okay. She was like, it's fine. Just put one down. But anyway, so she was amazing. She really helped me. She was the reason why people, like, she could get me to do things that other people couldn't get me to do, like, because she was somehow able to, like, make it think that I was my idea. So, like, I was really mean and hateful to, like, Michael at times, because I felt like he was trying to ruin my fun. And even though I wasn't supposed to be doing fun things because I was trying to, you know, take care of a newborn, but at the time I was like, you know, I want to have fun. And then there was another part, like, once it got really far in, like, towards the needing to be hospitalized, I thought that Michael was my ex-husband. And that was a really toxic relationship. And so when I thought that, I was just very much like, get the fuck away from me. Like, mm-hmm. And don't touch my baby, because, like, don't, you're going to take my baby away. It was very scary. So that was crazy. Okay, so then I'm going to tell you a little bit about some things I did in their house that was kind of crazy. So one night I was trying to clean the house, but I wasn't able to finish anything. So I was also naked a lot of the time, so I just didn't want to wear clothes. So one night I was in our guest room, which is where we were staying, and there was like that we had the pack and play. Trip wasn't in the pack and play. He was in the swing somewhere different. But I just started like taking all of the stuff off of like the shelves and out of the cabinets and putting it into the, just piled it into this pack and play, like sheets, shampoo, lamp, food, clothes, everything just in here. And Heather comes in and she goes, "What are you doing?" And I was like, "I'm reorganizing to make room for shit and to take care of my stuff. I'm trying to just focus on the most important things. So all this stuff had to go in here so that I can focus on other stuff." And she's like, "Okay, Kelsey, put on some clothes and let's talk about what is going on." Because I was naked.
Heather told me about this. We were talking about it recently when we were over at, I think it was Michael's birthday. And Heather told me, she was like, "Yeah, I would just walk out and she would just be walking around naked." And I'd be like, "Okay, Kelsey, go put some clothes on."
Yeah. So it was basically, you were like in all of the movies when they go to a facility and there's always the one person walking around doing something that, you're like, "Oh, I know exactly where I am right now."
You were experienced that classic psychosis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You did a runway show, I think, too, naked.
I did. Well, no, I think I had so I found this cloth. It was, I think it was a tablecloth, but like I found it and it was like gold and shimmery. And I laid it out on the floor and I was like, "This is beautiful." And I like pranced across it. Like it was, I had a great time.
It sounded like a fun time, not gonna lie.
Your inner child was just running wild and doing whatever it wanted to do.
Yes, yes. So then, okay, this is the toilet paper time. So I had somehow convinced myself that I had had COVID. Don't know how, don't know why. I just thought I had COVID. Oh my God, I have COVID. And like, so one night I was just pissed and I just knew that I had COVID and everyone was lying to me, right? So I'm in the bathroom and Morgan's there because I didn't let her leave my side. And I'm like, "Morgan, this toilet paper, I can fucking smell it. I can smell the toilet paper." She goes, "Kelsey, it's toilet paper. It does not smell like anything." And I was like, "Fuck you, smell it." And I shoved it into her face and she goes, "Shit, that smells like lavender." I said, "What did I say? I can smell it. I don't have COVID." Like, I just, it was crazy. So now they're not allowed to buy scented toilet paper anymore.
No, wait. Because it was like a whole thing. I would be like, I'm a little confused. You thought you had COVID because you could smell the toilet paper?
Yes. So I thought I had COVID like prior. And then I thought, "Oh my God, I can now smell the toilet paper. So now my COVID is gone."
Oh, okay. I was just clarifying. Yeah. I was a little confused, but okay. All right. But I'm back on board.
The toilet paper did smell really good, though. Like, as soon as you got in the bathroom, best thing I've ever smelled.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, come on. All the craziness that happened, sleep deprivation, anxiety, I was manic, hormones. Now I'm just in the full-on postpartum psychosis. I'm hallucinating. My family could no longer take care of me. They didn't know what to do. It was out of their hands. So I had to be admitted. They took me to the hospital. So I spent 11 days in the hospital. So this was like day 11 postpartum through day 22. I walked into the room. And again, I thought that I was there to have a good time. I was ready to party. I was ready to put on a show. That was what I thought I was hired to do. Like, I was the entertainment. So I go in and the room, they were in like the common room. And this was, I feel like it was nighttime maybe because everybody was just out like watching TV. So the room was set up like a U shape. All the chairs were setting up this way. And then there were some tables at the front that were kind of pushed out of the way. And there was a TV right here. I sat my chair right here facing the audience of other patients. Not the TV, but the audience. And I then proceeded to do what I thought was a stand-up show. And I just offended a lot of people and did not follow directions. And I was just very I don't know, confused. So they would give me Ativan to like calm me down and like maybe go to sleep all the time. So I don't remember a ton about the first few days, but I do know that that was the beginning. And someone asked me, what are you doing in here? And I said, my husband dropped me off here so I could have some fun. He dropped me off here because I needed a break and I'm here to party. And like, everyone was just like, I don't think that's why she's here. Who's going to tell her? Oh, not me. Like I said, I definitely thought I was there to have a good time. But every time I started to have a good time, that's when they would give me a shot of Ativan so I could calm down and like sleep. So if you don't know, in order to stop a manic episode, you have to sleep. If you are manic, in order to break that cycle, you've got to sleep. That's just how you turn it off, sort of. Am I right, Connie? That's what I was told. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that always doesn't fix it. Just so people know, medication, antipsychotics, and sleep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So is that kind of like restarting your computer? And when it's acting all glitchy, you're like, all right, we're just going to put you to sleep and we'll wake you up again later.
They turn you off and back on, Kelsey.
It's like turning your dopamine switch off and then letting it reset. And then there you go. And then turning it back on. So.
Hey, I told a client that the other day. I said, when in doubt, I do the same. That's basically my rule of thumb because that's what IT always tells me. Turn it off, restart it, turn it back on. It'll be fine. Oh, it didn't work the first time? Just do it again. It'll be fine the second time. And I told him, that's my rule for life. If I'm having a really bad day or I'm really stressed out or anxious, I'm just going to go to bed. And when I wake up, it'll probably be better. It'll be fine.
But I did want to say that, Kelsey, for all the people listening to this, that I don't want them to think that sleep is the only thing that will fix that. Because when you have postpartum psychosis, you need medical attention and you need medication additional with sleep. So yes, you're right, sleep, but also antipsychotics, mood stabilizers, medication to help you get there.
Right. Yeah. Here's a little bit of the chaos that I caused inside the hospital. And then I'll get back to like more of the serious stuff. I streaked naked through the halls. Didn't know I did that, but was told about it. My roommate asked to be moved to a different room because she just didn't like me, couldn't handle me. I don't know. I had to be alone. I was constantly singing, always being trouble for being naked. Apparently, they had cameras inside of our bedrooms, I think. And so when you were in the shower area and the bathroom, you were supposed to get dressed in there and then come out into the room because many of us had roommates. So like, that's courteous, right? I didn't know that. So basically anytime that I was like naked, I just was naked and everyone got mad at me. So that was really annoying. And then I did talk shit to the scariest patient there, or at least other people thought he was scary. And by talking shit, I mean, I said, sup. Like I didn't actually talk shit to anybody. But I thought I did, man. I was like, oh, did you see that? And I definitely thought that my whole family was in there with me. Like there was a time that I was like, you know, I was calling people by their wrong names because I literally thought that they were other people because I was hallucinating. So to me, they were somebody different. I constantly complained about the toilet because I couldn't get it to shoot water up my hoo-ha because, okay, when you have a baby, you have something called a peri bottle and you use that to clean yourself because you got to be careful with like your stitches and, you know, that's how you clean yourself. So I was expecting them to have something that did it for me because I didn't have a peri bottle in the hospital. And so every time I would go to the bathroom, I would ring my little buzzer and I'd be like, how do I make it clean me? And they were like, the toilet doesn't do that. You have to get in the shower to do it. And they had like a shower thing that like went down there. And so, but I every day, and it was the same nurse. She hated me. She was just like, you again, what's the problem now? And I was like, I don't know how to get the thing to spray my thing. And she was like, it doesn't get in the shower. And I was like, oh, so then every time I would pee, I would get in the shower. It was a whole thing. Oh, I was really mean to them sometimes. So there was at one point when I said that I wanted to continue to nurse and like pump because I wanted to be able to nurse when I got out. And so I was like, I need a pump. Like it's time for me to pump. And they brought me like a pump and they were like, here's how you use it. And I said, I fucking invented this thing. I know how to use it.
You're so smart, Kelsey. I love you so much.
I know. And then I proceeded to get milk everywhere. So I didn't know how to use it, but you know. Oh, man. Okay. And then there was one other night that I just was like not going to sleep in my room. Every 10 minutes I was out of my room and it was like nighttime and everyone was in their rooms. And I just kept leaving my room and they were like, you have got to stay in your room. And I don't think they're allowed to lock you in your bedroom. But Michael gave them permission to pretty much do anything up to a certain point, like, because at first they were calling him every time something happened and they had to get his permission before they could do anything. So like, she's running through the halls. Do we have permission to give her Ativan? Like, yes, you do. Michael was finally like, look, you have permission to get do whatever you need to do. Just don't give her shock therapy. Okay. And if it gets to that, then we need to discuss. I'm just kidding. I don't know if that was the limit, but he gave them a threshold, right? And so I'm assuming that he gave them permission to do what they did, because I basically was like, I'm not going to sleep in my room. I'm just not going to. And they were like, okay, well, you can sleep in this room. And they opened a room and it was literally like a cinder block room with just a cot. And I think there was a toilet in it maybe, but they were basically like, you can sleep in here. Are you going to sleep in here? And I was like, yeah, I'll sleep in here. Fuck you. And I like went in and they locked me in and I slept in there. So I was in isolation for a night and I thought I was, I don't know. It was just crazy. But anyway, so looking back, obviously, I can laugh at all of this, but this part was hardest on Michael because he was home with the baby and he didn't know if I would ever come home and be the same person that I was before. And like I said just a minute ago, he got a call every single time they had to do something for me. So like I said, he gave them a threshold and said, like, you know, don't do it unless this happens or whatever. So he also visited me in the hospital. So him and my dad took turns every other day to come see me. And the first like 3 or 4 days, I kicked Michael out every single time because I thought he was my ex-husband. So I was like, nope, you can't be in here. I don't like you. I don't know who you are. Like, I don't know why you're here. Get out. But my dad would come and he would be fine. Like, I would visit with him or whatever. And I just want to say, too, both of our families really stepped up when it came to this point because, you know, Michael had a newborn and I didn't even realize that my memory just wasn't there, I guess. Like, I just wasn't thinking about Trip. And so I didn't even realize I had him or something. I don't even know. But anyway, my parents, my dad and stepmom would like take Trip for the day or for the night. And like Michael would be able to sleep. And then a couple of days, Michael would stay at his parents' house. So they basically were like shared parenting with my husband and my baby, because that was how it was able to work.
Well, it wasn't, maybe I'm remembering incorrectly, but wasn't Trip colicky at that point too?
Because I think before I went into the hospital, Heather got me to be okay with him having formula because he had to. I was running out of milk and they didn't have any other option. And so, yeah, he switching from breast milk to formula really upset his stomach and made him very colicky. So he was a handful.
Yeah.
And then even after I got out, we had to switch him to like a soothing formula because his belly just, I don't know, he just, because colic is caused by gas usually.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was very colicky. So it was a hard time for everybody. But like I said, I lost myself. I don't know. I couldn't remember. Like after, I guess I slept for a while and I was getting onto those medications, I couldn't remember details about myself. It was kind of scary at first. I couldn't remember like why I was there, where I was geographically. I would walk around the unit and I would listen to people talk and I would assume they were talking about me. And then I would get it into my head that I had all these other problems wrong with me because I would be hearing them say, oh yeah, she's got this, that, the other. And I'm like, oh my God, they're talking about me. I have that. And then I also thought that I was still pregnant, or that I was pregnant again, which was very strange. And then I thought that I was married to my ex. And so that's why I kept kicking Michael out every time, I guess. I don't know. So I was able, like, eventually I was able to function, like, you know, once I was on the medications and I was sleeping okay. But I still couldn't remember a ton of things. So I started to journal again, but this time it was very constructive. I'm going to show you the first page of this journal because it's very important. So you see, like, how there's a map?
Yeah.
Okay. I got the time zone wrong, but either way, I like sat here and looked at this map and I was like looking at the clock and I was like, where am I? And then I would write down, so I wrote down that Ohio, and then I had moved to South Carolina 2.5 years before that. So I wrote that down and I was like, we're in the Eastern time zone. So here we are, whatever. And then I wrote down the day that I was admitted because it was on my hospital bracelet. So I wrote that down. And then I also wrote down Michael's birthday. I don't know why. And I wrote down a lot of people's birthdays because I felt like it was important, I guess. I don't know. I also wrote down the day I got married, my birthday. And then, so this, I used this journal as trying to get to know myself again. That sounds so crazy, but it's just what it was. So I wrote down like all the people in my family. And because I thought I was still pregnant, I wrote like a little baby down here, but then I scratched it out because I was like, I'm not pregnant, right? So I just had a baby like days ago. I'm not pregnant. But anyway, this journal was, it started out kind of crazy, but then it ends kind of nicely. But basically, after I was a little bit more like stable, I guess, I don't know if that's the right word to use, but I was able to hold a conversation. I was able to like function like a normal person for the most part. I would take this journal to my visiting with like my dad and Michael, and I would ask them what's true and what's not true. And at first they didn't tell me like the full truth because they didn't know if I could handle it. And the doctors told them, just agree with her, like tell her, you know, because they didn't want to like cause problems. But eventually I was like, you need to tell me the truth. So anyway, long story short, I marked a couple pages. I definitely thought that Luke, my brother's son, and Lola, which is Morgan's daughter, I thought they were twins. They're not even close in age, but I thought, oh my God, they're twins. And they're my twins. They're my baby twins. That's not true. I thought that I was in a motorcycle accident. So Michael was in a motorcycle accident before he met me. And for some reason, I thought that I was in the motorcycle accident. And then I was like, no, that's wrong. So I made like notes. I would put motorcycle accident. And then in green is where I would meet with my dad or Michael. And they'd be like, no, that's actually not true. Right. I thought that I went to UC, University of Cincinnati. My sister went to UC. So then I had to write down, I went to Shawnee State. Then I went to NKU. I did not go to UC. I'm a teacher. Like I had to write down like my profession. I'm a teacher. I teach fourth grade, like this and that.
Were you still
a teacher? It's fascinating
then?
The way that your brain works and how it's almost like the wiring got burned in certain areas. And so you had to kind of reroute it and have people help you with knowing what was real and what wasn't. And when you said real or not real, that reminded me of The Hunger Games, the last book where he had been tortured into believing things wrong. And so he had to start asking people real or not real. And people would tell him or Annie. I think Annie was the one that had PTSD and had issues as well. And so Fennec's like, just ask what's real and what's not real and have the people closest to you tell you what's real and not real. And then you have to be able to trust them that what they're telling you is true.
It reminds me of that guy.
It's just interesting.
Who has schizophrenia and he has the dog. So he'll greet somebody and the dog will let him know if the person's actually there or not.
Wow. I didn't know that.
So it's like,
are you talking about from like TikTok?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then SNL covered him and they pretended that his dog wasn't real. And then he was like, how dare you say that? He's right here. And there was nothing there.
and the dog wasn't joking.
Oh my gosh. I know what you're talking about. That's so funny.
It was hilarious.
But yeah. That's how it felt. Like I felt like I didn't remember myself. It was very strange. I So this part I was going to read to you, it says, I'm not a doctor unless I graduated from the School of Hard Knocks with a Grey's Anatomy degree.
That's awesome.
I don't know. I just like thought that I was a doctor. Well, because when I first went into college, I wanted to be a pediatrician. That was like what I wanted to do. And then I realized I'm not very good at math. And I was like, no, I'm going to be a teacher. But anyway, yeah, there was like certain things about me that I just didn't know or couldn't remember. It was just very strange. So
I think that you should make songs out of your journal entry.
Make songs. Hold on.
I definitely think it'd be a great book.
Well, yes. Yeah. I mean, I'd love to. That would be cool. I just don't know where to start. Oh my God. But yeah,
just
yeah.
You started it excellent in your journal when you read the entry.
Yeah, you did. That's exactly.
Just use your journal.
Yeah. Yeah. I would write down song lyrics in my writing, like, and like other things that I would think of. From Hocus Pocus, I said, remember, Winnie, remember. Like, I wrote that, and the way in my head that I heard it is like that, like from the movie. But anyway, yeah, so like, it's, I basically, like, a lot of this too is writing about like my childhood. Like, I loved going sledding, I loved playing in the snow. Blah, blah, blah. Like I don't even know why I wrote it or like, cause I was doing the group classes that they offer. Cause like when you're in a unit like that, they have group sessions and things like that. And they do certain things and they encourage you to like participate or whatever. And for the first little bit, I didn't obviously cause I couldn't, but then I did. So I think some of that definitely helped, but then occasionally it would be like harmful for me. Someone came in and told their story about alcohol abuse and being an alcoholic. And then I was like, am I an alcoholic? Was I drunk this whole time? I got real confused again because I was like, I don't know. Is there a name for that, Connie? Like when you take on someone else's, I don't know.
I don't know about that, but I do tell my patients that when they are in that beginning of anxiety and like the real beginning periods of postpartum anxiety with OCD and depression, it's not the time to start therapy because your anxiety is so great, just like you experience. It's that anxiety overload. Am I going to be this way forever?
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember when I went that somebody was there like a year later and they were still in the meetings. And I thought, holy shit, I cannot be like this for a year. Like, no way. So yeah, not a good thing to do when you're in that overload because yeah, you can take on other people's anxiety concerns. I'm sure there's a word for it, but I can't think of it.
Influence diagnosis? I don't know.
That sounds kind of right. I mean, it does, but I just...
So is it, I mean, their general idea is they're trying to get you to a baseline. Basically, right, where you're functioning enough that
yes,
they can now build
you.
On that, right, mm-hmm. and make progress going forward. But they need you to function first before yeah. they can let you go anywhere, and that's their goal, basically.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it sounded like. So eventually, I got there. Right, I was back to myself. I had remembered. I don't know when it clicked, but I just know that. Through the journaling, eventually I was able to know who I was again and remember Trip and remember I'm not pregnant and kind of let all of that go. And I think like visiting with my family, like I only got to see my dad and Michael, but eventually like when it was Michael's turn to come, I would know that it was him and I would look forward to it because I knew he was my husband. Like I knew who he was and who I was and all of that stuff. So I left the hospital feeling like myself again. I think, like I said, I spent 11 days there. It doesn't feel like it felt so much longer when I was in it. And there were days that I felt like it was Groundhog's Day. Like I would literally ask someone, is it the next day? Like, what day is it? I don't know. It was crazy. So I remember driving back home, I wasn't driving, but Michael was. And it was like I was seeing things for the first time. It was very surreal. I was just like looking out the window and looking at all the trees and the buildings and the whatevers. And we went to my dad's house, and that's when I met Connie for the first time. We video chatted, and Michael was there because he really had to like walk me through, make sure that I shared important information and not sharing, you know, making sure my information was correct and like this and that. I was sitting at my dad's desk and he has all these pictures of us as kids and my siblings and other nieces and nephews and stuff like that. And it was just like crazy for the first time to see it because it was almost like I was seeing it for the first time and seeing myself in those photos and being like, yeah, that's me. I don't know how to describe it. It was very strange. And then I got to see Trip again, and that was incredible. He was only 3 weeks old at the time when I got out of the hospital, 3 weeks ish. But I was just like really racked with guilt for a long time because I feel like I missed so much of his newborn phase, I guess. I didn't get to give him his first bath, which it's not that big of a deal, but it was in that moment, you know? And it was just really hard too because I had to stop breastfeeding because of the medication I was on and because it wasn't healthy for me as far as like my sleep. So that was kind of difficult as well. But I was on, so my medication, I was on antipsychotics, and I think I was on that for, what was that, 6 months, Connie, I think? And then we switched it to a mood stabilizer.
No, I think we kept you on the psychotic maybe for the full year.
Oh, I think it was
the first year. Yeah.
Yeah. So now I'm on a mood stabilizer, and I don't know. I mean, I may have to be on one for a long time, right?
Maybe. So that's the thing. I mean, there's a lot of, and you contacted Massachusetts General Women's mm-hmm. Center. They do all the studies. They're wonderful. That's who we go to for research. And, but they're looking at it now. They're looking into women who have never had depression and, you know, any major anxiety and depression just as you had, and then boom, you have a manic phase. So do we diagnose you as being bipolar? That's a really hard line. Because I did in the beginning, yes, I said that you, I believe, I diagnosed you as psychosis with postpartum onset bipolar. But now the last educational seminar I went to, they started talking about, well, what do we do with these moms? Are they now, do they have a diagnosis of bipolar for the rest of their life because they had that one manic event during postpartum psychosis? It's different mm-hmm. if you didn't have that certain area of psychosis related to postpartum.
What do you think happened first, though? Was it the psychosis that made me manic, or was it the mania that made me psychotic? Like, I've always wondered. I don't know. Or is there a way to know?
I don't know if you do know, honestly. I think it all started with the lack of sleep. And I would probably say it starts with the manic phase that leads to psychosis.
Mm-hmm. That's sort of what I thought.
Generally, yeah, because you can be manic and not be psychotic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yours actually turned into a form of psychosis. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
It sucks. I hate that you went through that.
Yeah. The last thing I wrote was my maternity leave ended in March and I went back to work as a teacher as if nothing had happened. The miracle of medicine, sleep, and the support of family is how I was able to find myself and heal. And that's my story.
It was a wild ride.
Yeah, it
during
was.
That time.
Yeah, Montana, tell the part.
just the part where he called me, let me know. Yeah, so her husband actually called me. I think it was the same night that they had taken her to the hospital or whatever, and he was like, "Hey, look. This is going to sound really wild, but we just had to, like, you know, commit Kelsey to a hospital because she has postpartum. She's not making any sense. Like, there's something wrong with her." And I'm not sure if it was a full diagnosis at that point, but he was saying, like, you know, you're manic and all of this other stuff. I was like, okay, cool. What hospital is she at? And he was like, "Oh, you can't go visit her." And I said, "Okay, well, that's fine. I just want to like look up the hospital or whatever, you know, see what it is, how good it is." So he tells me, and I get off the phone with him, and immediately I'm like up on my feet. I'm like, "I'm going to put on clothes." And my husband's like, "What are you doing?" And I was like, "They put Kelsey in a hospital, and I'm going to break her out because I don't know if he's just doing this, like, or if this is true, and I gotta go."
And see, I remember because you messaged me.
Yeah.
Right after that, and you were talking about it. And two things to keep in mind here. Montana's not diagnosed at this point herself. So there's that. And also that's a triggering event for you. So yeah. The two of those combined, on top of the fact that you loved your friend very dearly and are very protective. I was like, hey, let's, can we maybe pause just a minute and get a little bit more information, maybe. Let's not break somebody out of a hospital right away. I understand the feeling, but just to be on the safe side, let's make sure that's necessary.
Yeah.
I was like getting ready to do it. I just didn't believe that. Kelsey is the last person who, like, I might end up like that, but Kelsey would be the last person that this would happen to. Mm-hmm. And I still, like, for days, I believed that he had put her in there. Like, obviously, it was against her will or whatever, but it was, like forcibly.
No, she was there to have fun. She didn't care. She was good.
I was there. I signed over. I'm pretty sure I signed power of attorney I signed over my rights as a medic because I couldn't make medical decisions for myself. I couldn't make any decisions for myself. So I was no longer, and the only way he got me to go in the first place was because my dad took me too. Like, I had to have my dad on board, I feel like, with everything. So he was there when they dropped me off. And when he dropped me off, my dad was like, now, Kelsey, when's your birthday? And he was like asking me my birthday. And I was like, I know my birthday. It's this day. And he was like, okay, well, what's Anthony's birthday? When's your sister's birthday? When's my birthday? He's like, just don't forget that. And I'm like,
maybe that's why you wrote them down once you started getting level.
Maybe.
Yeah, I wonder.
Because he was asking you those questions.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't believe you were in there for real until I went to Michael's parents and I talked to Morgan and Heather. And I think I had talked to your dad too. And they were like, nope, she was cuckoo bananas. She unraveled a whole bunch of toilet paper and walked around naked. And I was like, that doesn't sound like Kelsey. But it took like 5 people to convince me that you were like actually needed to be in there.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And then she sent me a message. She's like, all right, false alarm. She's supposed to be there. It's fine.
Yeah.
All there.
Yeah. Ride or die, Kelsey.
I'm just so glad that you went willingly, you know, because if you didn't want to go, it could have been more traumatic, right? Involuntary commitment is sometimes not a fun thing for people. So I'm glad that you were like, yeah, let's go. So that's so good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll just have my fashion show for new people. Thank you very much. Y'all did not appreciate it.
I was ready to put on my comedy show. I thought that my comedian, the girl that I like so much, Eliza, I thought she was there. So I was like, I'm going to put on a show for her. Here she is. I'm going to show her that I can do stand-up. Like, I can't.
God, you're such a hoot.
Yeah. So that's me. So let's hear from Connie, I guess.
So I guess we'll get into the interview questions. And the first question is, tell us a little bit more about you as far as like, what do you do? Do you have specialties? What those are? That sort of thing.
Sure. So I am a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner, and I work at a pretty large practice in Charlotte. And I treat women, only women. And I love treating women with maternal mood disorders, whether that's prior to pregnancy, after pregnancy, during pregnancy. Now, I also see other people as well with schizophrenia, bipolar, just general and generalized anxiety, depression, all that good stuff. But I love the mamas. That's who I usually go to.
What got you into it?
So what got me into it was that I experienced a form of postpartum depression, but I had what was called postpartum depression with OCD. So I had those intrusive thoughts, that overwhelming anxiety. So there's 3 kinds of postpartum. In the postpartum period, there's like 3 phases. You could have postpartum blues, then next is postpartum depression, and then next is postpartum psychosis. So Kelsey experienced the worst, and then I experienced the middle, the postpartum depression, which you can have OCD tendencies. And that's what I had. I never had any kind of anxiety or depression my entire life. And then I had my first son. And when he was 5 days old, I just started having these horrible thoughts. thoughts of harming him, harming my husband, harming myself, and just thoughts that were really shameful that I didn't want to admit to anybody. So that's why I'm so glad Kelsey asked me to come on and just spread the word, because I feel like so many women don't want to talk about this because they're ashamed of having these thoughts, because just like Tripp and just like Charlie, mine, like they were planned, they were wanted, and we want these babies so bad. And then all of a sudden, what the hell happened to us? So we have these anxiety, these thoughts, these actions. Like with my situation, I couldn't hold him. I couldn't change him. I couldn't get near him. I was so anxious. So luckily, I was a NICU nurse at the time, working at a really large hospital in Charlotte. And along with my mom and my sister and all the NICU nurses, I had every single day and night covered for probably 2 months because I couldn't be left alone with him. My anxiety was so, so bad. But I didn't have what Kelsey had. I didn't have those grandiose thoughts. I didn't have that psychotic behavior. I wasn't manic. But I did have to get some medication to help my anxiety and to help those intrusive thoughts, because that was scary shit. Scary shit that just nobody ever wants to think about doing that to their kids.
I just wanted to like ask real quick. I only recently learned that a little bit about OCD, and that it's not like making sure everything is in line and everything is like perfect. Can you maybe, you've said it a little bit, what OCD actually is, and that's that intrusive thoughts, but could you maybe, for people who don't really know, because there is this big misconception of what it is, maybe explain a little bit?
Yeah. So it's, there are different, there's OCD behavior and an OCD diagnosis. And what I experienced was postpartum depression with OCD behavior. And that is hyperfixating on thoughts and just excessive worry. And what if he does this, and just not letting them go. And then also having those thoughts just repetitive, so repetitive. I would imagine, I bet you I had hundreds a day, and they were so scary and they were graphic and they were gory. And it still makes me like just ashamed to even say that I had those thoughts. I open up to my moms now when I have a patient that has those thoughts, because I always ask, do you ever have thoughts of harming yourself or harming others? Okay, what are they going to say? Normally, no. And then I say, do you ever have those anxious thoughts that you wonder, where the fuck did that come from? It just hits you out of left field, and it is so scary and horrific. And they're like, yes, yes, yes. So it happens mm-hmm. to so many women, and I'm sure men too, but again, I don't see men. But it does happen more in women. OCD is greater in the female population. But it, especially if you have a pre-existing diagnosis of mm-hmm. anxiety, you're more likely to have postpartum symptoms such as OCD behavior after you have a baby. So it's important to watch out for that.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely. That was not fun. But that's why I went into it, because I experienced it. And I was a NICU nurse at the time, like I said. And then it took me a while to start to talk about it. And then as I started working in the NICU, I started screening the moms that work there using these little screening charts, because so many of the moms would come in and they seemed so anxious. And in the NICU, you know, all we as nurses were focused on the baby. And then these moms come in and I started seeing like they were so anxious and they were sad. They have a right to be sad because they're not with their babies. But I just saw a lot of anxiety in those moms. And so I started screening the moms, and believe it or not, like their scores were really high. So we were able to then send them back to the OB and sort of get them in contact with their OB provider to really, really watch out for any kind of postpartum depression, anxiety concerns that they might have. So. And then after that, I was like, you know what? It's just not enough. So I went back to grad school and then got my master's and then started doing this. And so this is why I love what I do, because I can work with these moms. And when they come to me, and you can tell they don't want to talk about those thoughts, whenever they hear that I've had them, it sort of like lets this wall down, and then they start to talk about it.
I think that's really important too, because like my, even, you know, my therapist, she has the same stuff that I have. And so being able to talk to her, or she's experienced the same, you know, she's got the same difficulties and things like that. So I know when I tell her, she's going to be able to relate to that. She's going to understand what this struggle is. And I think that's so cool. It's not cool, obviously, that you went through that. But
it is cool. You know what? It happened for a reason.
Yeah. But I think that's really important. And they can sit down in front of you and be like, wow, that she actually knows like what this feels like. Okay, let's do this.
Yeah. Yeah. And I tell them they're going to be okay. But what is alarming is when they say, yeah, I have these thoughts and I am going to act on them, or I have a plan. That's where it turns into a different situation. But I would say most of the time, these women come in with anxiety that's just so scary to them because they're having those intrusive thoughts, which it's reassuring to hear someone's been through it. It's common. It's a lot more common than they think. So it's definitely reassuring to them. But yeah, but what Kelsey experienced, that's a 1 to 2 women per 1,000. Very, very crazy. Rare. Kelsey. Yikes. Yay, Kelsey. You are the 1 of 2, 1,000.
You're so special.
I'm so special.
No, well, I like that it's being talked about more too, because like I didn't know, I mean, none of us knew that postpartum psychosis was actually a thing, like it even existed. I knew postpartum depression was. I didn't even know about anxiety, but even that, like, it's kind of taboo. People just don't talk about it, because once you have the baby, it's like you said, all about the baby. It's not about the mom.
Well, and even going to like the doctor's appointments, like leading up to giving birth, they don't really talk about it. And that irritates me looking back on it. I'm like, why don't you say, like, and I think, you know, they saw that I was on like a very light, little dose of just anxiety medication. I think it was Celexa. And so I think they mentioned it one time. Oh, you're on anxiety medication. How's your anxiety right now? Oh, I'm good. Okay, great. Like that was it. You know, there wasn't, and I'm not faulting my doctors because obviously they did a great job. I delivered, everything was fine, but you know, they can do better. I'm not faulting them, but at the same time, I would like to hold them responsible that they can do better, you know, and any doctor can do better probably, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure. And the sad part about that is that they're so rushed because, you know, you have 30 minutes. If that, I know we have 30 minutes in our psychiatry visits for follow-ups. And I try to take that 30 minutes and really dig in and how are you doing and stuff like that. But it's just the whole, I think it's just society. It's just, you know, in big areas, there's just so many, like you have to get this many patients in a day. And it's just a profession that is, it can go under the table, unfortunately. You know, those mamas, they can come in and just sort of slip through. But that's why education is so important in what you're doing right now, like educating others and getting the word out. And that's the way to do it and look out for each other. So. For sure.
So I will open up to the next question. What do you think is the most common mental health issue that women face?
Depression. I would say depression. Yeah. And then are you talking about like just general and overall general?
Overall general.
It's the most. Yeah. You know, I see everything. If I had my preference, I would just see these postpartum moms and during pregnancy the entire time, but it's depression. So, because it's always like, does depression lead to anxiety or does anxiety lead to your depression? You know, it's like,
the chicken or the egg. Yeah. That's what I've been thinking over and over every time it gets brought up. And I mean, because it does, it seems like so often it's hand in hand.
Yeah, it is for sure.
You'll see that they're being treated for depression and anxiety. I know in my case, I was treated for depression and anxiety. I remember going into my therapist's office and going, you know, I read this thing on Facebook or Pinterest or something, and it gave like symptoms for generalized anxiety. And I think I have it. And she goes, oh, I thought you already knew that. And I was like, no, that was a novel idea for me. Thank you. She was like, oh, I'm so sorry. So, hey, it is important to inform yourself and know what to look for. So on that vein and on that thought process, specifically for postpartum issues, what are signs and symptoms that people should be aware of and know to look for with the new moms in their lives that maybe they can make sure that they get the help they need?
Yeah, so great question. So I will use myself as an example because that's exactly what I had. I would definitely recommend looking for the anxiety part. That's what's going to show through. Number one, I feel like that shows more than the depression, they really don't want to do stuff. That typically baby blues the first 2 weeks, that's normal, right? Feeling down, having those hormones up and down. And then after, if you're, say, your sister, your friend, if they're still acting just not themselves after 2 weeks, take a closer look. Unless it's like Kelsey, right? Unless it's like definitely something is not right, which that's postpartum psychosis usually happens before that postpartum depression time. Postpartum depression, usually we see women around 2 months, 3 months, 4 months. That's that postpartum depression. And you would see anxiety goes hand in hand with it. It really does. But isolation, not wanting to get together, you know, pulling back from those friends, usually, yeah, come over, hang out, and just sort of like, not feeling it today. Even if they say no, just reach out to them, and all help should be all hands on deck if possible. In my situation, I experienced on day 5, my anxiety went through the roof. I thought I was having a heart attack. My husband took me to the hospital, but it was a panic attack. Now remember, this happened to my son, and he just turned 15 last week. So this is 15 years ago.
Very different time.
And we went to the hospital. Yeah. But at that point, we went to the hospital, and they said, oh, you have pregnancy-induced hypertension, and we're going to treat you with a medication called like Procardia. So my blood pressure was in stroke range, just through the roof. So they started me on that medication and sent me home. I went back 2 days later because, again, I felt like I was having another heart attack. And this sweet nurse who I had just finished my bachelor's with came up beside me, and she worked in the ED. And I was so happy to see a face I knew. And she put her arm around me and she whispered, she's like, have you ever heard of postpartum depression? And I was like, no, never. What is that? And she's like, I think that's what you're going through. She's like, I think that's what is going on here. Because they were bolusing me full of IV fluids, trying to get my blood pressure down. And I was so anxious, I couldn't eat. I was so nervous, I couldn't sleep. And I would sleep for like 2 or 3 hours and then wake back up. Now, again, it wasn't manic. It wasn't like Kelsey. I did not feel like I was like, okay, 2 hours, ready to go. Like I was struggling. I was wanting to crawl in the bed, but I could not turn my mind off. I could not sleep. I was having such a hard time with the whole anxiety, putting the whole picture together as a new mom. And so I welcomed help because I was tearful. And like I said, I just was so afraid. And to be a NICU nurse, that's all I did was handle babies. But I was so afraid he was going to die or something horrible was going to happen to him. And, you know, working in the NICU, I handled 23-week babies with no problem. Why can't I take care of this term baby? What is wrong with me? So when I went to the hospital, they never diagnosed me with postpartum depression. They again kept it as a hypertensive situation, sent me back home. And then I called my nurse midwife, who I'm friends with. And I just was so tearful. And I was like, I'm having horrible thoughts of hurting Charlie. Like it was the worst thing I ever had to admit to anybody. I said, I'm having these thoughts and please, 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 like you got to see me. And she said, I know somebody I'm going to call. It was a therapist. She said, I know her. I'm going to get her in. And she was a psychologist, so she couldn't prescribe. So my midwife prescribed me, I was breastfeeding. So my midwife prescribed me Ativan, which you can breastfeed on. If you have to breastfeed, it's one of the medications that we choose to use in the postpartum period. But I just couldn't do it because my anxiety was through the roof. I couldn't sleep. So I ended up having not to breastfeed. I let that go, which was the hardest thing in my life. And that's another thing is that I feel like so many women, you know, going into these pregnancies, it's like, I'm going to breastfeed. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. Honey, that plan can go out the window and you just have to be prepared to let it go. And that's the Kelsey. That's what I tell all these moms is that, you know, and I'm sure lactation, whoever is in lactation who's hearing this, they probably hate me for saying that, but it is okay not to breastfeed, believe it or not. Yes, it's best. I will say that. It is 100% best. I get that. But if you can't do it, it's just going to cause more stress and anxiety, then let it go because that baby mm-hmm. is going to be healthy. We need a healthy mom. That's what we need. We need a healthy mom.
Yeah. Those lactation consultants can be, woo, they can yeah, be all
yeah. a little. They can.
I'll leave it at that.
They can.
Well, like, okay.
Don't get me in trouble.
I don't have any kids. Don't plan to have any kids. But even I know that society's like pressure on women to breastfeed is it's a weird thing. Like that's a weird thing. Like, and it's so there's so much pressure that
you can't
even
do it in public.
Somebody, yeah.
God forbid you do
you
it,
can't
in public.
Do it in public, but you have mm-hmm. to breastfeed because you're not a good mom if you don't. Mm-hmm. So it's yeah. this weird, like, I don't know. I've always thought that was an odd thing to like plant your flag on anyway, because like, why is it anybody else's business what I'm doing? But yeah,
it's not right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So a couple weeks had to go by with medications. Unfortunately, they take a couple weeks to kick in. And so during that time, I had my troops came in. Like I said, I had nurses, my mom, my sister, friends, everybody literally signed up on a sheet, came over and just took care of me. My husband was traveling, so he had to go back to work. And that was the scariest thing. Like, I cannot do this alone. I remember being so fearful. And that's just not me. Like, I'm independent and I like being alone. And, you know, and now like when my husband is out of town and my kids are gone, I'm like, oh, I love a house by myself. And that's how I always was before I had Charlie. But then after the fact, it was just a total flip and my whole world changed. So it can happen that quick. It took a couple weeks. And then after I went back to work, I want to say probably a good 12 weeks after I had him, I started to feel a little better, and then it got better and better and better. So, but I remained on the medications for many years. So a lot of women want to stop them right away, and that's not the thing to do. You got to stay on them for a while.
Is there not, and this might be like a little, I mean, I'm not a doctor. Obviously we say it almost every episode, but is there not a way to like prevent this from happening? Is there not like a way to, I don't know how you said hormones are up and down. Is there not a way to like taper you into that hormone level, you know, kind of like to prevent stuff like this from happening?
Well, not with hormones, but what we do recommend is if you have a pre-existing anxiety disorder, address it, right? Like go to therapy, learn those coping skills and things like that. And if it's to where you are on medication, then you may need a medication increase during pregnancy or after mm-hmm. pregnancy. So there are ways to, I would say, better control it. Definitely awareness. And like I said, psychotherapy in addition to psychopharmacology. Those two things together can be a game changer for postpartum depression.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Or how much like hormones played into it. So it was just like,
Oh yeah. Hormones definitely play into it. And then, you know, they've looked into like taking the placenta and put it in a capsule so you can slowly reintroduce that. And there's studies on that. And I honestly have not looked that far into the studies. It wasn't something that I decided to do, but I know women do that. And that is an option.
So are there any specific mental health issues that women go through prior to having a child that may be more likely to lead to a postpartum issue as well? Or is it just kind of all over the place?
No. So if you have a history of depression, a history of anxiety, a history of bipolar disorder, you are at a higher risk of having postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety, even possible psychosis if you've got those, well, mainly bipolar disorder. So yes, it's very important to talk to your provider and just be up to date with, if you're on medications, make sure you stay on those medications. there is so much information from what I love is Massachusetts General Center for Women's Mental Health. They give us really good information on their studies. They're always doing studies on women. And like I said, Kelsey even reached out to them and said, hey, I want to be a part of this study on postpartum psychosis. But they're always helping us as providers who use these medications all the time in pregnancy, postpartum, because we want these moms to be able to interact with their babies, breastfeed if possible, all that with medications. If you have bipolar disorder, that doesn't mean you can't have a baby. There is medication that you can take, just like depression and anxiety. So yeah, it's all about research and giving us the answers to what medication is going to help this mom the best. So, and that's what we try to do. Just pick the right one that they can use in pregnancy, they can use after, and then they can also breastfeed on.
And we can put the link for Mass General Women's, will you say it again? Massachusetts General Hospital Center for Women's Health, correct?
Women's Mental Health.
Women's yep. Mental Health. Yeah. That's what I meant. Okay. We'll put women's the link to that. We'll put the link to that in our show notes. That way any listeners can get to it easily.
Yeah. And another one is Postpartum Support International. That's another great site to go to.
Okay. And this kind of leads to it. It kind of would have worked either way, but I think we all kind of know this, but I would love to hear your kind of summary and input. But why is it important to take care of your mental health, and how can somebody go about doing that?
There's a lot of places that I know. I work for a nonprofit company, and that we take Medicaid and Medicare and everything. So it's important to see your provider if you feel like you have anxiety or depression and address it, because there's a stigma, unfortunately, that keeps a lot of people from getting the help they need, but it's very important. So you can be who you want to be. You can be involved in society. You can be the best mom you want to be. You can be the best wife you want to be. So it's important to, if you need medication, get the medication. If you need therapy, get hooked up with a really good therapist. Not everybody needs medication. I say medication a lot because that's what I do, is I manage meds. But there are people who just manage psychotherapy and then psychiatrists, they obviously do both as well. But yeah, it's important to stay in tune with your medication so you can just be the best you want to be.
And then specifically for postpartum health, in your opinion, what can we do to better deal with postpartum issues and help women who are going through that? But whether as a general, as the general public, but also as a healthcare provider, in your opinion. Mm-hmm. Improve the help that we're offering and improve on what we're already doing.
Yeah, I would definitely say support is number one. Family support, friend support, and just offer, you know, even if it's to come over and fold some laundry, doesn't have to. Can I come over and see the baby? It doesn't have to be that. Can I come over and wash some laundry? Can I come over and clean your house? Just things like that, I think, are really, really helpful. Offering to take their other kids places, you know, anything that can take the load off can help them. I feel like, you know, in all those other countries like India, what? I think the grandmother moves in and they literally, like, the mom is in bed just taken care of for months and months and months. We don't do that here. Like, you have to get your shit together quick and get back to work. So as women, I feel like we need to just support each other and offer, like, hey, can I help you do this? But support's number one. And then reach out to your mental health provider, reach out to your OB, reach out to your PCP, whoever it can be, if you feel like you need help. And then they can direct you in the right way for sure. But the main thing is talk about it, because I know that there is that stigma and a lot of people don't want to talk about it. And then awareness. And that's what we're doing today. So with those options, I think that that's the best thing to do, is just make it known that it's okay if you're anxious, and it's okay, but talk about it and get help.
I want to just add to that, because as a mom. Like when a mom has a baby, it's almost always like, oh my gosh, how's the baby? Tell me. Oh my goodness, the baby, the baby. Since this happened to me, I 100% when I see a new baby with a mom, I'm like, how are you doing, mom? Like, how are you as a mom? How are you adjusting to being a mother? And I think asking that question, or like Connie said, just let me come over and just spend time with you, you know? Like the baby will be there, of course, and I'm great. I love the baby, but let me be there with you, you know? I think that goes a long way too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I did see a TikTok the other day that offered to, if you have a friend that recently had a baby, when you call them and they're like, oh yeah, I'm fine. No worries. You don't have to come over. Go, what's the hardest part of your day? And then when they tell you, say, okay, well, I will be there at that time and I'm going to help you in whatever way you need. If it's midnight, okay, I'll be there at midnight. And if you want to just feed your baby, then I'll do the laundry and the dishes for you, or I'll cook tomorrow's breakfast for you and put it in the fridge so you can just pop it in the microwave. Like, I'm not necessarily going to take care of the baby for you because I know that's important to you and you need that time with that baby, but I'm going to do other things while you're doing that. And that way you don't have to do it and you can get some sleep. Like, that idea never occurred to me to mm-hmm. ask an open-ended question, what's the hardest part of your day? And then say, okay, yeah, well, that's when I'm going
to
come over.
A great way to ask it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We did something new. My friend is going to, she's due May 13th, I think, 15th, something like that.
Any minute now.
Yeah, real soon. But we had her baby shower recently and all of us made a dish for her to take home and freeze. So like something like that, that seems so simple, can go so far. Mm-hmm. So
I think that that's huge. You just got to look out for each other. Even if they say, no, it's okay, just still do it. You know, we are raised in a society that we're supposed to be strong and we can just push through stuff, but it's okay to say that we need help. So it's, you know, I feel like 90% of the women are going to be like, I got it, but just do it.
Oh, we're told not to complain. Or
exactly.
That, you know, if we complain, we're bitching or we're,
or
you
we're
know,
weak it, or yeah.
Yeah, we're weak. All of this other stuff.
Making a mountain out of a molehill. It's not that big of a deal.
I hate that I didn't make you ask that question, Samantha, about how can we be more preventative? Because the way I wrote it and the fact that y'all just copied and pasted it, I just saw that. I wrote down, I'm just going to tell you this, outside of just not shooting a kid out of your body, is there a way to be more preventative?
Yeah, and you know, I was like, there's no way that Connie's not going to know that came directly from Montana.
Oh, I thought it came from Kelsey.
These questions, most of them were Samantha, but that one was from Montana.
Well, you know, I don't even know why I asked you for the questions before, because I didn't even look at this damn sheet. Like, I hate that. I get so wrapped up in just like just talking about it. So yeah,
good.
I don't even know why I asked you, but when I did see number 10, outside of not just shooting the kid out of your body, I was like, oh my God, that's so cool. I love it. That was hilarious. that's great.
Well, I covered that one myself too. So at least I don't have that one. One thing I did want to know, are there long-term effects of postpartum past? I know you said it's typically considered, you know, within the first year. But you also kind of mentioned that some people want to kind of get off the medication, but it's not really advised all the time. So are there long-term effects of postpartum? And I know you kind of hinted that sometimes it might be actually lifelong possibly, but.
Yeah, you know, anxiety is so, I really think that anxiety, I think your body changes when you have a baby. And if you feel good on that medication, then stay on that medication. SSRIs, that's the first medication that we go with to treat anxiety and depression in psychiatry. And they are safe for long-term use. So we, you know, if you have just had a baby and you want to, let's say you guys want to have another one and, you know, very soon, I would probably advise my patient, like, you probably need to stay on it and let's just see how you are and just gauge it. You can always go off, and like that's what Kelsey, right? Like we tried you off meds, and because I think weight gain was something that you were like, I do not like this. It was one of those antipsychotics.
The antipsychotics, yeah, I gained a lot of weight, but I've lost 50 pounds. So, I mean, I'm doing good.
Oh, you look so good. I'm so proud of you. Yeah, because we switched you to a mood stabilizer. Yeah. So that
Yeah, I've been on a mood stabilizer.
Yeah. So that's been great for you. And we can do that. But yeah, I think that long term, if you know you have anxiety and you're feeling better with a medication, then don't try to come off just to say you're not on anything, because it's okay that you're on that. And studies have really shown that SSRIs are typically safe in pregnancy. They don't cause any kind of congenital abnormalities. And so there's been so many studies that have gone on to look at medications to keep women mentally healthy in pregnancy and after. So that's the good thing about this, the day that we live in. There's a lot of information that give us clarity and give us just the okay to use medications that we didn't know about years ago.
Yeah, I think that was one of the hardest things that I had to deal with when I went on medication, because it's a stigma, but also it's a little triggering for me for a previous episode that I had had. And I kind of had to look at it. Somebody had shared with me that, you know, they say, oh, well, it's all in your head. Well, yeah, but also asthma's all in the lungs and they need medication in order to be able to breathe. So when it's all in my head and my brain chemistry isn't working correctly, sometimes I need medication so that my brain chemistry does work correctly. And that's literally all it is. It's making it so that I can function in a way that's normal and I don't have to struggle. And if that's what you need so that you can live a life, there's no reason for it to be stigmatized, because it's literally no different from blood pressure medication. It is there to help you live your life. That's it. Absolutely. It shouldn't feel like there's something wrong with you. There's not. That's just something special about you that we now have medication to help make things easier. So why not? And that was very hard for me. And I know that's mental health in general. So, and then you have the pregnancy on top of that, worrying that you either can't get pregnant, or if you get pregnant, how's it going to hurt the baby? And if I'm breastfeeding, how's it going to possibly go into the baby system? I mean, you're adding thing on top of thing on top of thing.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine how difficult that would be in those situations.
Yeah. The one thing that I would probably stress is, if you are pregnant and you're on an anxiety medication, don't just stop it. Talk to your provider first, because there's a very good chance that medication has been looked at and that you can continue it in pregnancy. So yeah, that's what I would say. That's a very important area to look into, is medications and pregnancy. So if you're on something, don't just stop it. Just call your doctor, talk to them about it.
And your mental health as the mama is extremely important. Yeah. So please take care of yourself.
Absolutely.
And never just stop medication anyways. You want to taper off that.
True. Please. And before we go into, we kind of talked about it, but kind of as a last question, and this is just because for me, it kind of feels like the lines are a little blurred, and maybe that's just the way that it is. But can you explain the differences in the different types of postpartum issues that people go through? Because I know there's postpartum anxiety, depression, you know, psychosis, and I know some of them can be blurred. Some of them can overlap. Sometimes you have one and then you have the other, but kind of the difference between each one.
So postpartum blues, that's the first one. That typically is very common. 50 to, I think the last analysis that I saw, it was up to 85% of women experience postpartum blues. And that's within the first 2 weeks. So super common. So that's not a time that you would start a medication just because they came to you and said, oh my gosh, I'm so anxious. And, you know, like, okay, well, it's been 2 weeks, you just had a baby. Like, it's normal, right? It's normal to be anxious, but how anxious are you? Are you staying up? Are you not sleeping? Or are you just a little worried, you know, about a poopy diaper? So that varies. That anxiety level varies. But postpartum blues can be like weepiness and just overall sadness. But if you don't see it get better after about 2 weeks, we need to look into it. Like, why, what's going on? So then the next one would be postpartum depression. And that usually is diagnosed around 2 months, 3 months, and then it can go on. That's where postpartum depression, it can overlap with anxiety. Like when I was saying I was sad, I was crying, I was so shameful of those thoughts. Okay, there's your depression, right? Like you're so sad and isolating. I was so scared to leave my house. So depression was there, but anxiety was also there because I could not touch my baby. I was so afraid of him. And I think it was just because of those thoughts. I just was so afraid I was going to act on those thoughts. It just freaked me out. So that's the postpartum depression part. And then the postpartum psychosis is the next level. And that usually occurs within the first couple of days to a week. It's early. So first 2 weeks, I believe, don't quote me on that. But I know it happens in the first, I think it's around the first 2 weeks. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And that is definitely not something that occurs later on in pregnancy, like postpartum depression. Postpartum psychosis is early onset. And like I said, usually 1 to 2 women in 1,000 it hits. So very, very rare, which is a good thing, but it still happens. So, and Kelsey's one of a couple patients that I've treated with postpartum psychosis. So, but they are all like good mamas now and they got through it. And, but yeah, it took them a while. I mean, it's scary. I can't imagine going through it, but it can be treated. That's the good thing. It can be treated. So, but it is an emergency. It is considered a medical emergency. So you, Kelsey, were an emergency.
Yes, I was.
Yeah, truly.
So that's the prepared questions we had, but I also kind of like to, I think I did this the last time we did an interview, but any closing thoughts or anything that you would want to leave us with, final thoughts or comments about what all we've talked about today, or anything you want to our listeners to know?
Just going back to thinking about what happened to me, I would have never, ever thought it could have happened to me because I was very relaxed and very calm. And I just was a very chill kind of person. So I would just say to encourage women, even if there's that friend that you've known for a long time, it can happen to them. So just watch out for each other, because just because your friend doesn't have a history of anxiety or depression and they've managed all this stuff and they are successful women, it can happen to them and they may need your help. As much as they'll say they don't, they may need your help. So encourage each other and look out for each other, because it can hit people who has never even, they've never even had an ounce of anxiety or depression. It can affect those women. I think that's the main thing, is just talk about it and be aware of it and have that awareness of it. And when you're pregnant or when you talk to someone who's pregnant, definitely don't scare them, but they need to be aware of it. So don't be like, oh, did you hear about Kelsey?
I've told my story to plenty of pregnant people.
Have you really?
Well, oh God. I mean, kind of. Yeah, sort of. When I first met Nicole, I didn't know she was pregnant then because she didn't tell me. She was very, very early when I first met her. But yeah, I told her just briefly, like, oh yeah, I had postpartum psychosis. I was just bonkers for a while, but I'm good now. You know, sometimes I just bring it up because I feel like it's important to talk about. And I'm an open book. I want people to know that it happens and that it's okay. And yeah.
She's already had one child.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Montana. Nicole has a son already. So yeah, this is her second. Yeah. So she probably isn't scared by it because she's already done it before, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that you share your story. And even, you know, I know we've talked about this, that you... Do you have a risk of it going happening again? Yes, but with medication, much less. So,
mm-hmm. Well, and you know to look for it too. Mm-hmm. You know what to look for. So you'd be able to catch it much, much quicker than the first time.
Yes, absolutely. Friends, family, yeah. And medication. Well, and if she's on medication,
we'll immediately send you to the hospital. Just go ahead and take her just in case.
Immediately. Right away.
And I'll come and break you out. Don't worry.
Well, thank you so much for being here. This was really wonderful.
Yes, this was awesome.
Yeah, it was great. I'm so glad that you asked me to do this.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you for answering all of the many questions that we peppered you with throughout this episode.
Yeah. Absolutely. But if you guys ever, you know, want any information, or if you ever need anything else, just don't hesitate to reach out. I love doing this. I love spreading the word. So I will definitely be around if you need anything. I love Kelsey. I'm so glad that you were able to get back to you. So I didn't know you before it happened, but I see who you are now, and you're such a joy to be around. When I see you pop up on my schedule, I get so excited. I'm like, yay, Kelsey. So
I know.
She's so bubbly. Yeah. She's so sweet, and she's so positive. And like, she's almost exactly the same as she was before. She's just like more knowledgeable now. And I think that'd be it.
Thank you. So, oh my gosh.
She's very knowledgeable about this. I'm so impressed. And that's one thing that just makes my job. I love what I do because I get to see the hard part that you guys go through. And then I get to walk with you. And then I get to see after, like when you and Tripp came in my office, and I got to hug him and I got to hug you. That was the first time in 3 years that I had actually seen you face to face. And so that was like the best day that I got to hug you and hug him. So you've been through a lot, but it was good stuff. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for being here. We really appreciate it.
Until next time. We love you. We mean it. Take your meds.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
The Reaper will come for us all.